Welcome, welcome, welcome to another episode of Real Life Radio. I'm your host, Genetech Bruh. Tonight, Tuesday, it's cold Tuesday, February 26th, 2019, we will be discussing what are your thoughts on the hashtag ADOS. There's a lot of information that's not out there, and then there's a lot of information that everyone is grabbing. Most specifically, we find a lot of people who agree with the movement that I don't necessarily believe read the mission statement. So, whether you like it, dislike it, we would love to hear your thoughts about what it is and what it could be. Brother Roz, greetings. Are you there tonight?
Greetings. Yes, I am. Peace to you. Peace to all the callers and the listeners. It's great to be on tonight and to have this, what I think is a very important discussion. Because this is, everything seems to be accelerating at a very fast pace, and it just seems to get more and more complex as more and more people chime in on this particular subject. And it just seems like the layers and the many layers to this situation and the many angles of perception that are being brought to the forefront is just kind of overwhelming, because there's so many things I've been seeing. I've been really trying to get as much information as far as I was watching quite a few YouTube videos of people kind of discussing what they thought of it. And like I said, there's just so many angles of perception and so many layers to this entire issue that it's going to be interesting to watch it unfold. I just, especially after watching T. West's video today, where he actually went through piece by piece the website that Antonio Moore and Yvette Carnell actually created.
Well, I have it and pulled up.
Go ahead.
See, I have it pulled up. I was going to read the Black Agenda just for those who have not read it, but you can go on to ADOS101.com. /Black Agenda, and you can read this yourself.
Go ahead, Ross. Yeah, T. West went through the whole thing point by point by point, and he wants them to succeed, you know, because he agrees with the movement. He just doesn't agree with the premise of the movement as far as being separatist, and now this mantle of being taken up of blaming Black immigrants for. Well, the way some of these folks talk, you would think all their problems come from Black immigrants specifically. And he doesn't agree with that, but he agrees with the premise of American Africans getting reparations from the government. And one thing that he said is, first of all, because he wrote his own Black Agenda, and I think it's well thought out, and it covers such a great scope, but he focuses on reparations. And he made it in points, but you could go to, you know, this particular, you know, point one on page so-and-so. And he said what he first said was that they didn't do that. It's just paragraph after paragraph with nothing outlined. Like an official document would actually have numbers. And if it's really extensive, it'll say, you know, number such and such on page so-and-so. So you can actually go to that place as quickly as possible, find what you're looking for, and go right to the point. That wasn't done. He also talked about the fact that whenever you're writing up a proposal, especially one that's going to be a legal and political proposal, that the most important point you put first. Whatever the real focus of that document is, you make it the first thing on the page. And everything else that is of lesser importance will come after that. On theirs, they put a whole bunch of everything except reparations. They literally did not get to reparations at all until the very end of the document. And then another point he made, which was really poignant too, was that they never discussed the Black family. And one thing he said, which is, I've been saying for decades now, and I've said it on our show a few times and other shows, the cornerstone of any nation is the family. And it's the Black family that has been destroyed. And he's speaking of man, woman, and child. The natural order of things. Not any of the other stuff that people want to throw in the mix. We're talking about the natural order of things, the Black family. And that, I think it only came up once, and it was after the majority of these other points they brought up, they detailed.
Well,
another, go ahead.
Well, we're gonna get to that, but before we do, let's run through some of these articles.
For sure, let's do it.
Okay, now I'm gonna start this off, and this is this article comes from Michigan State University. The website is called www.canr.msu.edu. Emotions are contagious. Learn what science. Excuse me. You say something, Rob?
Oh, I didn't say anything. I'm muted.
Okay. Well,
does somebody else come on? Because I'm not looking at the board. Let me double check.
Yeah.
Maybe that. Oh, a couple people.
Everyone,
okay,
let me put y'all on mute for a second.
Okay. Go ahead.
All right. Emotions are contagious. Learn what science and research has to say about it. It's true, emotions are contagious, and it's called emotional cognizance. Learn what science and research says about how easy it is to quote unquote catch others' emotions, positive and negative. August 16th, 2017. Author Jody Swartz of Michigan State University Extension. We've all heard that laughter is contagious. You may also heard someone say that they are a sympathetic crier, meaning if they see someone crying, they'll likely start tearing up too. Even though they don't have a reason to cry, it's funny how you can take on the emotions of another person. As if emotions or feelings are contagious. But it's true. Emotions can really be contagious. It's called emotional cognizance. And sharing emotions can happen easier than you think. It is simply when one person's emotions or behaviors are mimicked by another person's. Oftentimes, these emotions or behaviors happen subconsciously. According to you are catching other people's emotions. In the U.S. World and News Report, upbeat emotions such as enthusiasm and joy, as well as negative ones such as sadness, fear, and anger, are easily passed from one person to another, often without either party realizing it. John T. Capio from the Center of Cognitive and Social Neuroscience at the University of Chicago explains that the more expressive someone is, the more likely you are to notice that expression and mimic it. He continues that the muscle fibers in your face and body can be activated unbeknownst to you at much lower levels than if you were to perform those movements yourself. It's those muscle movements that trigger the actual feeling in the brain. It's been said it's easier to catch an emotion than it is to catch a cold. But how is that exactly? Social networks is the answer. Social networks. According to researchers Nicholas Christia, professor at Harvard University, and James Flower, associate professor at the University of California, San Diego, social networks have clusters of happy people and unhappy people within them that reach out to three degrees of separation, I think that's what it's supposed to be. Christakis and Flower say a person's happiness is related to the happiness of their friends' friends, and their friends' friends' friends. Mm. This is to people well beyond their social horizon. Their research found happy people tend to be located in the center of their social networks, and large clusters of other happy people where each additional happy friend increases a person's probability of being happy by about 9%. What about catching the negative emotions? Yes, you can catch those too, and their effects can be damaging, as they can lead to sadness, depression, fatigue, decreased energy, and stress. You think that with such negative impacts, you stay away from those who emit negativity. It's just not that easy, though. And we'll stop there. I will. I was unable to put this in the thread, but I go ahead on to put that in now. The reason I had found that is because I was checking out this NPR clip, and they was discussing the same thing. Now, we have went over this about how contagious emotions are before, but right now at this time and climate that we're living in, you have a barrage of negative emotions, very little sympathetic emotions, I come to find, but negative and aggressive. And now that we know that these emotions are contagious, we have to watch what we consume, the energy that we consume, whether it's from people in person or people over the internet, because we begin to mimic those, as the article stated. And more times than not, we end up mimicking those negative, aggressive behaviors towards our family members, the ones closest to us. So I thought that was very important, especially with the topic tonight, because if we are lucky enough, we will hear from people who have a better understanding, or at least believe they have a better understanding about the hashtag ADOS movement. And this is not a fight. Just before we get started, these are the conversations we need to have just to understand. So with that being said, Brother Rise, did you want to add to that article?
Yes. The contagious nature of emotions is something that I learned about once I really got deep into my spiritual practice, and how to mitigate that also came through my spiritual practice. Once I went through initiation, and that really made it even more plain. And we talked about this earlier this evening. This is a good example of how emotional contagion works off the internet, because the internet, they do experiments on us all the time that we're not aware of, on Facebook and all these things. And it's been documented fact that you can change the emotions of millions of people just by putting out one piece of propaganda. That's mm-hmm. documented. But you have a cop, white cop, racist white supremacist. He wants to kill a black man that morning. So he says to himself, I'm going to agitate the first black male I see. I'm going to call him all kinds of, you know, racist names. I'm going to be rough with him.
You're going to be Liam Neeson.
Pull him over for the most minor infraction. And then I'm going to get him to respond or react in a way that will justify me killing him.
So you're going to be Liam Neeson, huh?
Pretty much. This is how emotions become contagious. Now, white people know over the last 500 years, we've been conditioned to be emotional. We've been infantilized. So the process of infantilization has a heavy emotional toll that it takes on the being that is being infantilized. And because they know that this is literally a part of our culture and our makeup, and especially in the Western Hemisphere, that is what they use to their advantage to predict our behavior, and it facilitates them get putting out the emotional contagion. We receive it, respond to it, and it gives them the justification to do what they do. I'll even say, we just talked about this right before we went live tonight. I was leaving work today, going home, going to the train station, and there was a young black male, and we were walking in the same trajectory on the same path. And he was younger than me, looked like he was in his 30s. And I could tell that something must have had him agitated or upset. I could just see the expression on his face. And I literally just saw a slightly younger version of myself. And I thought about it in the few seconds it took for us to pass each other. And I said, when I was younger and much more confused and much more aggressive, I would have used that opportunity to clean his clock. That's exactly what would have happened. And I literally envisioned the young me, the younger, more confused me, and my temper and my temperament, because he was not trying to move out of my way at all. And normally, these are things we do to each other all the time. We'll bump each other. It'll turn from a bump into either a fight, a stabbing, or a shooting, just that quick. And I just thought about how we do the same sort of emotional contagion to each other so that we can take out our frustration from our daily abuse on someone who looks like us, because it's way more likely we'll get away with it if we do something to them than if we do something to the real object of ourselves. And just that quick, I thought about that. And it also relates to the article as well, because I'm thankful that I'm older, wiser, and much less confused, because we do these things to each other all the time. And when they escalate quickly because we're victims. So it's just another thought, just that, like I said, from experience. And it's funny because our ancestors had a story in the Nile Valley where they tell a story about a Roman soldier. And the Roman soldier basically asked them about evil. What is evil? Because we didn't really have an inherent name for evil except for the term isfet, which means anything that's unnatural, that's out of balance. And usually those things that are unnatural and out of balance or can actually have like a negative vibration or energy. And those things usually create more and more negative circumstances. And they were able to make a parable dealing with the Roman soldier and how then they called it isfet is contagious. How you can, like they said, actually evil is more powerful than good. That's what I've always learned. And the reason why is because evil is contagious. Good is not as contagious as evil. It takes a lot more work to actually do the right thing than it does to do the wrong thing. It's very easy to do the wrong thing. And that's what makes evil so powerful. And it's not because of anything other than the fact that it is so contagious. It's so easy to just spread a madness kind of an energy amongst a large group of people very quickly under the right circumstances and in the right context.
Yo.
And usually it's a lot harder to do the opposite. Go ahead.
You know, it's easier to get a bigger reaction also when you when you're doing low down stuff. So, but you know, that's a conversation for another time.
Absolutely.
We had a couple of more articles and I know another video before we get into this into the open mic part of the show. So you want to get to the, what is this right here with, I can't say his name, but yeah, I'm going to just go ahead on and play this real quick and get this video out the way.
Okay.
I expect that the U.S. Supreme Court, when it reaches the U.S. Supreme Court, that the Supreme Court will rule in the favor of Trump. It may not, but my guess would be that it would rule in the favor of Trump. Now, what mainstream media is saying, they're saying... What?
Yes.
I'm sorry. Skip forward to 2 minutes and 47 seconds.
I got this, man.
Okay, no, I'm saying that's where I wanted to start it, because all of that stuff already passed. But what he says relates to tonight's program. That's why I wanted to use it.
All right, here we go.
I expect that the U.S. Supreme Court, when it reaches the U.S. Supreme Court, that the Supreme Court will rule in the favor of Trump. It may not, but my guess would be that it would rule in the favor of Trump. Now, what mainstream media is saying, they're saying, well, Trump, the numbers are down. The illegal immigration numbers are down. Well, okay, down from what? From what? What are the numbers? The fact is that illegal immigration into this country has remained high. And it fluctuates. It ebbs and it flows. It goes up, it goes down. But the main thing is that it's not going to stop. And it's not going to end until some concrete measures are in place to end it. And walls are just one part of it. Plain and simple, it is one part of it. Just like locking doors to your homes. It's a part of it. When you don't want people in, you need to put something up to prevent that. So, I agree with the executive order that's coming, the emergency order, that it is necessary. It is needed. Illegal immigration has most adversely affected African Americans. That's right. African Americans. And to those of you who are combative about some of my comments about this whole ADOS thing, I want you to realize that it is not African immigrants or other black immigrants who are in the U.S. illegally in large numbers. That is not the case. That has never been the case. So when some of you attack black immigrants from other places, you need to have your facts straight. And also, as I've indicated, you have some African immigrants who fight against you. You have some who do not. You have some African Americans who fight against black immigrants, and many who do not. But there is a segment of people who are trying to hype this division up. And I'm letting you know once again that where you don't have your facts straight, I will deal with it. This is T. West with AfroCentury News.
Okay. I got you, OG. I'm going to hook you up right now. So that was T. West off of AfroCentury News. I appreciate you sharing that with me, Roz. We share it with the rest of the listeners.
Oh, go ahead. What are you going to say? I'm sorry.
No, I say we just share that. What is it? AfroCentury News.
Mm-hmm.
And I put the some of the stuff that I've heard him talk about. I agree some. I disagree. I don't think I've ever met a person that I wholeheartedly agree with on everything. And I'm sure most people don't agree with what I have to say sometimes. But I think right now, because this has become a thing, and the one repetitive thing that I have heard and not heard is a lot of black people that I run into on the street have no idea what this is. So that's one thing. We have to pay attention to. I don't know if it's a we hadn't type of thing. We don't want to share the information. I don't know. But most people I run into haven't heard of it. On the internet, though, everybody knows. I guess according to whatever circle you're in. And it's causing I don't think that Yvette Carnell is causing a divide. I think some of the backlash on her may be from past statements. But I'm going to let you
that,
open
and
up.
And I've been hearing a lot about her being lesbian with a white woman. That seems to be another theme that's been coming up. The fact that she's with a white woman and that she's a lesbian. And that kind of tarnishes her in some way. And I've seen quite a bit of that over the last few days. What I think was important about what T. West said was when he talked about the fact that they are very few black immigrants that are here illegally. And I can tell you that because black immigrants are the most scrutinized immigrants of all the immigrants that come in this country. And whenever they want to expel someone from this country, they always go with the black immigrants first. That's how it's always worked. And that's why he said it's always been that way, because it has. When we come here, we are under serious scrutiny. Are we told not to associate with American Africans? Yes, we get that. And now we get the message in the countries we leave because we get access to American news. So all the different news clips of black people doing all the crazy things that they show only black people doing, and all the positive news is white news, they get the same infusion long before they get here. And in a lot of cases, they get told, some people in the airport, they cordon them off to a different room where they tell them, do not associate with American Africans. That's something else I've heard from other immigrants of African descent that I've known over the years. So the fact that we are the most scrutinized due to the fact that we are black, that nixes the argument right there. The overwhelming majority of immigrant black people are here legally. And in some cases, like you saw with the 21 Savage, a situation where he came here as a child, he had no idea what a visa was, how that whole process worked, and he stayed over his visa. Got into a little bit of trouble before he overstayed his visa and had no concept of any of that stuff. All he knows is that he grew up here. This is what he knows. This is what he's familiar with. And now they're telling him, oh, we're going to deport you. You know, everything worked out the way it did. But that's usually a lot of the times how it works, unless the person was into criminal activity and whatnot, and they had a plan on not going back because they were doing things where they would not need legal jobs and all of that type of stuff. And most of the time, when illegal immigrants get into the crime life, it's directly associated with American Africans. That's how you get the hookup. You can't come from another country and just create your own in most cases. It has happened. I could name a couple of gangs that became extremely powerful that came from another country here. But there's very few of those that happen. Usually you have to get entrenched with the local people just to learn how things go and how the ropes are and all of that stuff. So there's so many. But yeah, I think that's the main thing, is that he just said that we're not the ones that really are over here illegally in any huge numbers. There's not that many of us in comparison to other immigrant groups and a lot of white immigrant groups.
Well,
but
you
they
know,
get away with it because they're white. So go ahead.
I agree with you, Roz, especially on that point. We have always been the face of depravity. I guess that'll be a good way to describe it. Everything that's wrong when we're very few in numbers, but inflated as far as image, what you see.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I agree with all of that. But I think what it is that, like you stated one time before, it's the listeners who have come to that same type of mind frame as you when you was younger, and as that young guy that you seen that you was passing, you decided not to engage. It's that mm-hmm. same type of mentality, but it's on the internet. It's on the internet of front mm-hmm. at this particular point. And people, you know, just like the young people do, when you engage in person based off of rhetoric that you have shared digitally, things happen. So, but for those who want to add their comment, we'll go ahead on and get ready to these lines. By all means, give us a call. The number is
704-804-5056. Press star. If you wish to ask a question or make a comment, again, that's 704-802-5056. And press star if you wish to make a comment or ask a question.
So, So
didn't mean to take over.
No worries.
Yeah.
Brother Otis, greetings.
Greetings, my comrades. You just hit on a really good topic. Let me say this before I even make my comments, because I've been doing it with everybody from Joy Reid to Malcolm Nance to Angela Rye to Digital Sister and Roland Martin. If you're going to talk about something, my personal thing has always been, don't go by rumor, take the time to research it. And I'm going to say this. I've known some of you guys for 3 or 4 years. And I spent a lot of time working with the young lady who pushes ADOS. And I'm going to put it this way so it's not taken the wrong way. It's easy to knock down an argument when you're setting up straw man arguments and you really don't know what it's all about. And here's what I'm going to say to you so you get this picture.
Sure.
When Roland Martin first came out and attacked ADOS, he claimed that it's about shooting down immigrants. The primary immigrants that that young lady talks about is immigrants at the southern border. And her argument is, even though America tells you from a white perspective that those immigrants are not hurting us, the data shows with some of the same articles we've used when it comes to abolition. That what's happening in the poultry industry, construction, and everything else, the people that get hurt are low-wage jobs. So everybody knows that immigration is about keeping wages down. So when they tell you it doesn't hurt Americans, no, it doesn't hurt the 360-some million. What it hurts is the people that are on the bottom. Now, I know for a fact, after living in the Southwest, I warned people here on the East Coast when I saw large construction companies like Pulte's, U.S. Home, bringing in immigrants to the East Coast, because I'd already encountered them in New Mexico and Arizona. And my point to you is, my thing is, I understand what's going on at the southern border with Nicaragua and all of the stuff that came from the 80s that ravaged our community. Is also what created plunder in their country. So I have nothing against those people trying to make it, individuals trying to make it to this country. But I also know something else. Because I was in the Spanish community, marched with Cesar Chavez, put it up on Facebook and all that stuff 4 or 5 years ago. I know some of those people from when I was there serving in the military from the 70s. So when their relatives come and they got the little flyers showing that when you come in here, you can go to Alabama or up in Indiana or some of the things that we've even had on the New Abolitionist Radio, poultry farms. They're getting that information from somebody, and it ain't just no ragtag organization. So that means the industry is putting those flyers out. If you can make it to America, you can get a job. So I don't disparage those people. I do understand that when they come here, yeah, they are taking jobs from low-wage people. But here's the other part of that. Most of the research that is going on when you start talking about people from the diaspora, I'm going to tell you what I know for a fact. Almost 3 years ago, and I've been putting up some of these videos behind this. Almost 3 years ago, what happened on Yvette Carnell's channel is a lot of people from the Grapevine and several other African and Caribbean-centered talk and chats. We're talking about how screwed up the Americans are, us, because we're lazy. They come from a family that taught them to strive better. They don't worry about nobody because they don't even like their own Nigerian women. This is conversations that were had. And the point about it was, if you come here with that attitude, what ends up happening is, put the skin color aside. Right. You are the typical immigrant to this country because you don't even know the history of what it is native blacks go through. Why? You're in a country that's all black. So your struggle is never about color other than you've been colonized. And you living in a world where you believe now decolonization is over with because what? All of your leaders are black. You don't understand chattel slavery here in America. And there's a few that have literally come on that show and talked about it, that they literally have to talk their family into understanding that they fall in love with a black Native American. First thing you say, why are you going to marry that Akata? These are people telling on their own people. So there's our idea about kumbaya over color. It's just a fallacy. Now, I'm going to make another point. When ADUS was actually put together, I got into it with one of the founders, which is Antonio Moore, because, and I actually brought Max into it, too, to explain this to him, because they were talking about American descendants of slaves. And I said, well, as abolitionists, we got away from vilifying the victim, who is the human that was enslaved. So that's not how we use it. Quite naturally, he got an ego. He a lawyer. He tells me, yada, yada, yada. I don't argue with him on air. I just sent him some stuff in the email. I said, look, man, I ain't got time for your ego. What I'm telling you is we're not descendants of slaves. We're descendants of enslaved people. So my compromise to you is you can't tell me what you know and what the legal thing is, because you can't even sue slaves. You can only sue based on the institution of slavery. So right. Their actual acronym for them is American Descendants of Slavery. Now, the reason they say American is because layman's terms, when you say America, you talk about the biggest, baddest black guy on the block in North America. And I put up some things over this because I've been trying to say it to people for a long time. If you come to this northern hemisphere and you say America, nobody has any issue with the fact that it's the United States. So when you bring up that acronym, don't start telling me you want to go to formal terms in Black's Law Dictionary, because the truth is, if you want to talk about, quote, America in a whole, there's an S on there, North and South America, both continents.
Exactly.
Which is from Greenland on down, North American continent. So if you stay with me, I'm going to try to finish it up and get out of the way.
No problem.
When that thing first came up, the first thing happened is people like Roland Martin talking about, you're trying to divide us. Well, tell me, let me ask you something. It's because most of us have a Pan-African tilt. What is it anywhere in this last 35 years that the black diaspora has been united? I know in Cobra and I know four or five other organizations that have a storied history in trying to bring us together as a unit. But the specific thing here is this particular designation is about a specific thing. Descendants of chattel slavery in North America, since supposedly Angela set foot here in Port Comfort, which is 23 miles from my birthplace, where I am right now talking to you, in Hampton, Virginia, Port Comfort, which was the safe haven for black free slaves from the South. When they came up north, the place that they took them is Port Comfort, right off the east coast of Virginia, where I'm born and raised, 23 miles from me, now called Fort Monroe, about 5 miles from Hampton Institute, which is Hampton University. So here's my point to you. If that is the designation being used to try to make a direct line to a legal claim against the United States to try to get reparations going when you got a congressman that's done it for 25 or 30 years, can't even get a study, I don't understand why people in diaspora don't want to push that. And I've said this before on a couple other platforms. I know we as Americans born and raised here, whether you're from Trinidad or whatever your lineage is, all of us are happy when we see Haitians, what do you call it, Trinidadians, Ghanaians, Afro-Latinos out of Brazil. We celebrate them. We don't try to put them down. The problem is what has happened in the system of white supremacy, and I'm going to put it to you this way, then I'm going to shut up. If you do the homework, you'll find out what's happening in most of these HBCUs in the last 15 to 18 years. Rather than shore them up, when most of them are land grants and supposed to be supplied by state and federal government, you know what has happened? They've had black leaders come in, and 35 to 40% of the people in the majority of the 106, now I think is still left, HBCUs are foreign students. You know why? Because those foreign students come here and they have to pay cash. They're not coming from the project people like what we are getting Pell Grants. Mm-hmm. They have parents that can pay cash. So rather than actually support that institution and do what it's supposed to do for black descendants of chattel slavery, who most of them are we've already figured out, slaves built Georgetown, slaves are Harvard, most of the Yale institutions built by slaves. Rather than the white man pay recompense for what he built on the backs of black people, he's taking what? Black people from the diaspora, the same rich kids from the people that they've already usurped their government on the continent. So we got to understand the whole dynamic and not get caught up and falling for patterns. That's why I stay into it with Roland Martin there. This has never been about color and hating black immigrants. It's been about what the system of white supremacy is doing. And I'll cut it off with this because I got the facts and the receipts. Anybody want them, you can go to my page. You can ask me about it. Inbox me, and I'll give it to you. Because I do
know
the
about
research.
Everything you're talking about, good brother. I appreciate what you're saying.
And,
go ahead. I want
and
you
this,
to finish
this. This is what I'm saying to you. Even to the point that rather than, like, let's talk about Howard. Howard has a premier dental school. Rather than keep funding that school, you know what they've done? They've gone down and made deals with the Trinidadians and a couple of other Caribbean countries. So they will, in a joint thing involving some NGOs, so you know the white man got some money in that too.
Mm-hmm.
Government, our government taxpayers' funds pay for those doctors and nurses to get trained in their home country as uplift for the third world. And what do? Bring them to America and give them jobs. See, so nobody's mad at the human beings that is being done. They're mad at the white system of white supremacy that has figured out how to erase descendants of slavery from what we're rightfully owed. See, you're walking around saying why you're an American, you're going to get saddled with $80,000 to $120,000 or $40,000 worth of debt to be a nurse or a doctor, and they're down there supplementing of another person that has melanin to bring them to the U.S. to take your job. That's not an accident. People are actually calling into a vet show once they got over the shock of it. Actual people that are there telling you, yes, that program is true. And I'm not talking one or two people. I'm telling you, somewhere between 30 and 35 right now, 30 to 35% of viable HBCUs are foreign students of black of color from the diaspora. Something is wrong with that picture, because the truth is you ought to be able to do what? Educate those people in their homeland and build up the whole damn diaspora. You're not doing that.
Absolutely.
So this is about manipulation. I'm going to leave it at that because I got some more, but that's enough to not steal your program and tell you. The misinformation that's being used is what's keeping everybody in a funk. And we got to get a lot smarter than that before we come together. And I tell most people from that doing the Pan-African thing, people try to recruit me to NCOBRA. I'm going to tell you how I am about people. When NCOBRA people came out talking about it, evicting them, what they were doing, you know what I did? I went straight to their page and read it, and I told them, here you are telling me that you're supposed to be, what, about uplifting black people in the United States. That's what your name says. Then I look at your page and find out that you spread throughout the diaspora and all over the globe. So right there, you got something that ain't right on your page.
Mm-hmm.
You're saying that you're doing reparations in America. You use the term America for right here on the continent. But then I see since 1987, when you got started, that you got 32 years of going to the UN and everybody else, but you got no visibility and nobody to push this thing about reparations for descendants of slaves. Nobody. And now that a small group of people who've been doing it for 3 years and pushing hard, and I watched it grow, and to be honest with you, I've helped them do the research and helped them refine the language. And I'm not trying to take credit saying I'm that important, because there's an army of people that like me that we call crowdsourcing that make sure they get the facts right. And I've literally had to call out Yvette sometimes when I see her do something. I hit the timestamp on her show and I send her information that was wrong. And she'll straighten it out in the next broadcast. So I'm not trying to put her down. What I'm saying to you is this is about establishing a legal claim to make reparations viable. Sandy Darity has come on and talked about it. Doug Hamilton has come on and talked about it. So the best thing that to me that people in the Pan-African thing could do, you would think they would join with us and get that legal claim back in the court. so you can duplicate it in the same places that I found out. Since I've been doing the work, people from Nicaragua, Brazil, Trinidad have been inboxing me. Now, I ain't no expert on it, but they hear me talking about it on air, and they see what I put up on Facebook, and then they want to know why and how, and I take time to explain it to them. But when all you want to do is get caught up in your feelings and vilify people, that is the thing that keeps us divided. When you want to vilify people based on what you think you heard, instead of delving into it and find out exactly what's being said. And I'll leave it at that, my brothers.
Emotions are contagious.
Yes, they are contagious. So I say thank you a ton for that. Now, I do want to make clear that, and I've said this because Scotty and I had a really great discussion about this a few days back, actually. And we did like a whole program on it, so you can find it in the archive. And I'm in full support of it. I cannot see any common sense in any immigrant person, and especially an immigrant of African descent, no matter where you're from, coming here and saying they are against American Africans seeking recompense for the enslavement of their ancestors. I think that's just, if I ever hear that, I will be going off on somebody. Like, it just doesn't make sense to me. So I do want to make that clear. I'm not against it. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I think that every group of African descendant people that have the same experiences, regardless of where their respective homeland is, should be doing the same thing. So I just think that that's just actually really, really crazy to disagree with. I'm glad you brought up the conversations that were had on Yvette Carnell's channel with immigrant blacks that were disrespectful and just outright anti-black, because those are things that I have heard before. I don't know if it was like a whole lot of them, because that's not something I came up around or hearing too much of, but I have heard it before. And I know that that is a misconception, because, and I said this on the conversation I had with Scotty, black people in the island assume that black people in America have it way better. And when I say that, it's because of what they get in the media. When they watch the music videos and they get to look around in the background and they can see what the cities look like, they can see, because I tell people in the islands, the projects would be luxury living.
And Ross, are you still there?
Yes.
I want to interject this while you're saying it. Actually, Tone Talk does a good show on that, talking about the decadent veil, that they see images of the Cosbys and that kind of thing, and they believe that's the life we lead.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So we're not mad at them for the prop, because you know the power of propaganda. I'll leave it right there. You know where I'm coming from. Those are the images portrayed to them.
Absolutely. My mother's falling out with family about that. They've come to visit us, and they swear that we're going to roll out the red carpet and be spending thousands of dollars while they're visiting. And when they see that we're living a working class life, my mom actually fell out with my grandmother, and she was supposed to stay. And my mother sent her home early because she was just like, my mom's going to drain me dry. Like, she thinks that, you know, I want to take care of her and have her have a great time, but she's literally just spending up all the money that I have and I can't do it. And for her to try and explain to her mother the fact that even though we're in America, the hand-to-mouth existence is similar to the hand-to-mouth existence in Trinidad. The difference is you got better weather and usually the access to natural fruit trees all around you. In America, you don't. So, you know, we had to break that down, and that's one thing. But the other thing, too, is they're misinformed before they get here. They're misinformed when they get here. And then you have classism, which Scotty brought up, too. And there's this classism thing. So you have these maybe rich Nigerians, rich Trinidadians, or wherever they're coming from, and they have an anti-black attitude based on classism, which is something that they would have had before they left their previous country and just carried with them over here. And they find more sophisticated ways to practice anti-blackness on American Africans. So there's a lot of that.
I'm going to throw this in here because you're hitting on it. Here's the other part. Usually, if they're in a upper class or government, which most of them come from, they have a stable life. They're not the low income from their country. Some of them even talk like Lovey does, talk about having a maid, a nanny. That's not the life we live in America, but she was living there in Nigeria. So then when she comes here, she automatically assumes that she's apart from us, and one of the reasons we can't get there is because we've been too lazy. Again, propaganda.
Absolutely.
And so that creates it. And, but I'm going to say something else, too. Here's the thing that really gets me, and I've said it before and people get mad, but I'm country and I try to look at things logical. If you're going to really make Pan-Africanism work and you're in the system of white supremacy and the laws in this country has separated you from money in more ways than we can count, everything from banking to the hidden stuff, we're giving you loans even when they're smiling at you at the bank, they're still giving you interest loans higher. Then you have the stuff that happened like with Obama, that when things go down because you've been hit with predatory loans, you lose all your wealth. That's the primary way of getting wealth. So you're still living hand to mouth. And then you got somebody from another country that they never have that problem. Because guess what? They're in school with you. They're acting like they're suffering. But their parents are sending them $4,000 or $5,000 in their bank account because they've got the money. So they can stand beside you and play poor, but they're not the ones worried about eating. They're not the one that has a parent that got to go to the credit union and get a credit card loan to make sure you make it through this next semester. And that is the divide that most people don't get. If people for Pan-Africanism understood reparations, that the package, and that's something else I've been trying to deal with, I'm going to put this in while you're talking. The thing that really gets me most is most of the people that are against reparations keep saying all they want is some money from the white man. No, no, no. Sandy Darity has talked about that. They're talking about a long-term generational thing. Not for people like me to get $400,000 or $500,000. They're talking about making tuition free for your children, for you not have to pay for their education, because that should be part of your reparation. That you also can be in a community where you are on the tax board. You stop these people from doing what realtors are doing and depressing your income. You can go, I'm in this business, did home repair all over the country. And I keep telling people one of the most predatory things in this country when it comes to racism is real estate. And you got 1,000,001 black realtors that will tell you that ain't true. And I'm telling you, I know it is, because you can go zip codes a half a mile apart and find out the local tax appraiser is praising the white people's stuff higher. The same house can be built in a black neighborhood and it's not going to be worth as much. Plain and simple. That is in the system, and that's part of what reparations is about. It's about more than money. It's about taking down barriers and putting black people in places so they can control their own neighborhoods. Then if you want to get strong and wealthy and connect with that, with the continent, you can do that, because you're controlling some means of production and something. You're controlling how you connect with people. I'll leave it there.
Thank you, Brother O. We'll come to you. Again, most definitely, this has been a great open mic, and I believe that's Cujo that has this mic open.
Yeah,
go ahead and take
that.
Us into the break real quick, and
all right,
y'all can continue.
All right, you are now live on Real Life, the radio program with myself, Ross, and my co-host, Jenna Kepra. If you do wish to call in and ask a question or make a comment, please give us a call at 704-802-5056. Again, that's 704-802-5056, and press **. If you wish to ask a question or make a comment, please watch your background noise. We appreciate it.
Gentlemen, I want to make one more statement, because you know what I am. The other thing I've been doing passionately with them is telling them, and it was same with Darity when I got to speak with him, if you do not include abolition of the 13th, repeal and replace, everything you're doing is worthless. It has to go back to the legal foundation that is undergirding all of this. Abolition has to be part of reparations.
You're absolutely correct about that. That couldn't be better stated. And before we move to Cujo briefly, I did want to say I didn't know about the direct program, but I knew that something like that existed. I know that the majority of people that come here from these different countries are not affluent, but they do have an affluent class that comes here. And I said this when Scotty and I had the conversation, and I used Trinidad as the example. When the slaves were freed in Trinidad, they had the highest numbers of any population on the island. And in order to offset their numbers politically, now that they were free, they brought in Chinese indentured servants and Indian indentured servants. And to this day, it's the Indians and the Africans that are fighting periodically for the numerical dominance politically. And what Otis is describing as far as how immigrants are being used is nothing but offsetting your numbers. Because what they're doing is the Africans and other immigrants that they can use in that way, they know that that's going to create a rift with the native Black Americans. So instead of those numbers pooling together, because the fastest rising Black population in America are West Africans and most notably Nigerians. So if there's a rift between those two groups and they can't come to any headway, because actually Nigeria is the most populated country on the continent. It is today what Egypt was in the past. And fast coming is Ethiopia. Ethiopia is about to take them over in the next 20 to 30 years as far as just the numbers. They're set to like outpace everybody on the continent as far as growth. And so it's creating a clash between these two groups so that they cannot become a political force. And because of this rift, there's also a lack of ability to communicate to bridge the gap of understanding. Because remember, the same crappy, I almost said a curse word, the same crappy education that American Africans get with all the lies about their history is the same education that immigrants get. So if they don't...
You're 100% right. Let me get one more quick analogy.
Hold on, Brother O, because we got a few more callers, man.
I want to let that person talk, but I want to throw this in so they can hit on it too and understand what the deal is. We're not understanding how we're being replaced. Let's look at this. Howard University, the guy who ran the dental department that I was telling you about, the dental college, he actually ran them in debt. But guess what they did to him? They advanced him to president of Howard University. Now, what native Black person do you know that fails up in this country? I leave it there.
Yep, the ones that's promoted. You are correct.
Let's bring in Cujo. I'll end my thoughts for the moment, but we'll pick it up. Let's bring in Cujo. I know he's patiently waiting.
Go ahead, Cujo. How you doing this evening?
Peace, good brother.
Peace. Peace, Jenna. Peace, Ross. Peace to all the call-ins and listeners. Thanks for having me on, fellas. I just have two real questions, really. What does the ADOS expect if they were to get everything they want? You know, like, I haven't really heard exactly, like, you know, bullet points are just straight. We want this would be ideal. I haven't really heard anything too keen yet, so I'm trying to figure that out. And the second thing is, earlier you guys were speaking about the environment and how emotions and how negative, it's easier to do negative than to do good. But do you think that is because of the environment currently that we live in this society, where in this society, you do get a pat on the back if you do bad as reference, as opposed to doing good? And maybe if we were in a society that was the prerequisite where that was set up, where if you do good, it's easier than as opposed to doing bad. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I do.
Yeah.
All right. I'm mute my line. Those are my only two questions, man. Thank
Can I give him some quick links and then I'll put him in the
Absolutely,
chat. Maybe you can share it with.
Because I know you kind of talked about some of it.
I'm going to tell him some things. One of the best ways to find out what the reparations are based on is to go to an article called 40 Acres and a Mule in the 21st Century by Sandy Darity. If you Google 40 Acres and a Mule in the 21st Century, it'll come up in a PDF that's pretty long, about 32 pages, I think, if memory serves me right. And they lay out exactly what I was talking about. Guaranteed health care, redistricting. When they do these opportunity zones in these neighborhoods, stop setting the limits so high that only white capital can buy into it, that the people in those neighborhoods get low interest loans or grants so they can maintain their homes and keep their youth, their communities, instead of this gentrification. The other thing is another one called Umbrellas Don't Make It Rain. That explains why the system in America has kept people down. And it goes everything, it talks about everything from redlining to deed restrictions and things like that. And the taxes and stuff that I was talking about, how real estate companies and all that stuff affect us. And then the other thing is being able to get the proper capital and control your own school systems. I just put up an article. I'll have to try to share it to Roz, and maybe he can get it to the caller, and he'll understand it. Even the way school systems are set up seems like it's fair, but it's set up so that majority white schools average something like $11,000 more per student than black students all over the country, even Absolutely. Though you're in the same school district, because it's based on what? Property taxes, and they stay in zip codes. So even though you're in the same school system, they're allocating money to the primary white schools and leaving black schools underfunded. So, and then here's another one, 10 myths about the racial wealth gap. That's another one by Darity and Antonio Moore. Now, the thing he was talking about the system we're in, here's what the bad part is about the continent that I said often, even when it comes to abolition. Everybody, we know that G4S and CoreCivic, all of them are over there on the continent, got Ethiopians and Nigerians locking up their own. So it's hard to get away from white supremacy, because the first black president expanded AFRICOM from about 8 or 9 countries up to 52 of the 54 on the continent. So you're looking at the U.S. imperialism there doing what? Using the U.N. to steal resources and lock people up, and the military is there. So it's hard for me to figure out if you got a country like Nigeria that has doubled their billionaires, but they've also gone from 40 or 50 million people in poverty to 80 million people in poverty in less than 12 years. So you gotta stop this beast on the home front if you want to save Africa.
Yeah, I mean, thanks for that too, because I was saying the whole continent is still colonized. Every country that has colonized, every European country that has colonized an African country, they still have military bases up in there. So the threat from the colonial master is still there, even though there's a black face sitting on in the president's seat. And then on top of that, you have these older guys, because Africa has like the youngest population on the planet as far as just the largest number of countries with people below the age of like 25 or 30. Like, the continent is full of these countries. I know Kenya is one of the exceptions to that rule. But ultimately, you have these corrupt old leaders that are still taking orders from the colonial masters, and there's nobody making way for the younger folks who are fed up with stuff to do what they need to do. And then you got the threat of them being taken out if they attempt to, like they've been doing intergenerationally there for a long time. So you're absolutely right about that. The can you remind me, Jenna, what was the last part, the last question that Cujo had asked? And I forgot it.
Oh,
and
do we think that it's the environment we in, culture we in?
Okay, yes, thank you. Thank you so much for that. Now, I would say that is absolutely the case, because when you read the history records, and this is in European records and Arab records of people who were actually on the continent, across the continent, black people were described as the most honest. They would describe our streets as the cleanest of any place they'd ever been. There was no crime. Like Dr. Clark would say, there was no word for an orphanage, because there was no such thing. That we took care of our children. There was no such thing as an old folks home, because we took care of our elders. You lived in a family compound, so there was no such thing as prostitution. All of that stuff came with invaders. And I remember Dr. Ben telling a story about, because the moral character of the continent of Africa has been written about in these people, whether it's Khaldun or Al-Jahiz and The Glory of the Blacks Over the White. You can go to Count Volney. There's tons of people, white people, blacks, the Greeks, that have written about their encounters on the continent. And one thing Dr. Ben said that gave a great example of an Ashen type of society. And he talked about it because he was born in Gondar, Ethiopia. And he grew up there for a while before he moved to the Caribbean. And he talked about there was a shed where there was a man that had like a utility shed where he would sell necessary goods for many different ethnic groups. And they would walk from miles away, sometimes as much as 20 miles away, to go to this one spot to get the necessities that they needed in order to live their lives, you know, a normal, decent life. And his was the only place available for miles around. So people would walk from as far as like 15 miles away to this, you know, this remote place. And there were times when he would have to go and do the re-up for his items that he would sell. So he was, and he was there by himself. So there was nobody there that could take over and watch the store for him while he was going to get whatever products that he needed to, you know, refill his supplies. So he would just leave a bowl near the door and people would come in, take whatever they needed and left the necessary payment in the bowl. And no one ever stole. There was not one incident where anything was missing and he had to worry about losing product or anything like that. And he said the reason why was because everyone understood that everyone else, their lives also depended on them living a lifestyle in which no one was taking more than their fair share. And I'll use that, the term fair, let me remove that, taking their equitable share. I haven't used the term fair in years, Lord. So so what it was showing was that he could leave his store completely unattended and people would still make a transaction as if he was actually there. And that's the kind of respect for each other and for themselves that they had. And that's just one story, but there's tons of stories that were similar before the continent went through what it went through. And we had a more Ma'ashan outlook about things. And the main thing that drives specifically Black people's behavior is poverty, because poverty breeds crime. Okay. And a lot of the different legal machinations that are being done using immigrants of all kinds and using Black immigrants against American Africans is something that's been done in every place that's been colonized and still being done, but it's done in an especially sophisticated way here in the United States. And because of the rift that's being developed between those anti-Black immigrant ADOS folks, not all of them are, but there are some, and it's a significant number from what I've seen online. It's creating a lack of dialogue where people are never going to understand what their contribution is to the problem because everybody's up in arms with each other.
Well, hold.
And go ahead.
Nah, I was, I'm going to get my thoughts in a little bit later. I was just reminding you, we do have another caller. I wanted to get her in that room.
Oh sure, let's do that. Let's do that. Let's get the caller now.
Greetings.
Hello.
Greetings. How are you this evening?
Hi. I'm just a regular person. I think we have to sometimes be careful that most regular people, I don't know how much they're really thinking about this, because it's really a critical mass and ADOS, anti whatever, blah blah blah. And then you just said it's a significant amount of people online. What's a significant amount of people? Is that 10? Is it 100? Have you taken the time to count them?
Well, I haven't counted them. I've just gone to, like, the comment sections on well-known people who are speaking on the ADOS issue. And these people sometimes have hundreds of thousands of followers and whatnot. And all you got to do is go through the comments. And then you'll get a nice demographic because you have, like I said, it's not all of them, but I think because the internet leaves a sense of anonymity in the fact that you're online, all you have to do is just press the power button and move on with your life. So it's easy to talk reckless online. So I know that there's way more people who don't think like that than do, but online, it seems like they all come out to play online. And
100,000 people. This is what you're telling me.
No. I said that these are some of the people who are putting out some of the videos that I've been watching have like that many subscribers to their channels and stuff. So you might go through and there'll be a few hundred people having discussions of all different kinds. And not everyone who is commenting on the video is saying something negative.
What I'm saying is that you get to see a lot of that kind of vitriol when you go through the comment section. So again, it's not everybody, and there's no hard number, because like I said, one video could have hundreds of comments. Another video could only have maybe 20 or 30, or some might even have 5 or 6, especially if it's a newer video that just came out. So it all depends, but I've been watching so many things and, you know, just reading and researching. So it's, everything's kind of like a blur, but I'm saying like some of the videos that I've watched and, you know, just went through, you'll go through the comment section, and if it's a lot of people, you get to see a lot of conversation. And between the, because in some cases, I've even seen some of the Aboriginal community come out and get in on the conversation. So there's been a lot of exchanges going on online between different groups. And it's not like any sort of organized group. It's just people who have their individual opinions. And like I said, it's easier for you to go online and talk reckless, because a lot of the stuff people say online, they will not say to somebody's face. That's just the way it works. When you're online, it's easy to be rude. Just like if just before the internet and stuff, it was the phone. You could call somebody and talk crazy and hang up on them. But if they know where you live, they might come and see you. So it's just that kind of thing. It's not saying that there's this this critical mass of people online. I'm just saying that you're seeing a lot of that on the internet, because like Jenna said earlier, when I've talked to Black people in public, on the street, and even people that I know, a lot of them never heard of it. I haven't heard one person, I haven't come across one person yet in my personal life or that I've encountered and asked about it who said, oh, I know what that is off the top. None. Everybody who I've seen talking about this issue is on the internet. So, like I said, because it's easier to do things when you're not in the physical presence of a person, especially if you're saying something that is just completely, you know, offensive to another person, it's easy to do that on the internet.
Well, wouldn't do it to somebody. Let me add in right there real quick. Because this, I had done seen this a couple of times via YouTube, and you have to be a YouTuber, I guess, to done seen this develop. What happens is that the reason why it's becoming so big right now is because mainstream media are picking up points from these YouTube videos. The only way you would know that is if you catch those YouTube videos. So there has been enough acknowledgement from these white people who have been taking those numbers to say, well, it's this many people talking about this, so I'm going to start running on this. So it is a significant number. And it's not based off of anything that we could provide, but solely off of the moves that's being made because this conversation is being held.
Hold on, Otis.
Did you understand that, ma'am?
I mean, I'm... Okay, I know I said a regular person, but I'm not a stupid person. No. I heard of ADLS before it got on TV. Let me back that up. Because you're not going to talk me crazy. Like I never heard of anything before.
No, that was not my meaning. I was only seeing if you understood what I was saying, as far as we don't have the numbers, but we see that there has been enough numbers to make these white people move on that behalf. That's what I mean.
And I don't understand, I guess, among Black people, what the problem is. Let me tell you what I see. You're a regular, schmegular Black person. You have regular, I guess, everyday Black issues, your police brutality, stuff that I think, of course, a lot of people don't think like me. I get that. Everybody thinks differently. That makes us all unified. Even the people, the quote-unquote anti-Black regular people, like, what's his name, David Sheriff Clark or whatever. Without that uniform, they catch him on a bad night. He dead, you know?
Yeah, you're going to get that same treatment. Yes, I agree.
Yeah. So this is me. There's a general thing. And I just think about it when I was in school. You have your general friends you hang out with, and then you have a group project in class. To me, getting these reparations is a group project. Mm. Just because you're my friend, but you may not be in my class to be able to complete this group project. So I'm going to complete this group project. I'm not that close to these people. We have an issue in common. I am, as far as I know, my mother's side, South Carolina, so as far as I know. definitely into slavery. Whether they were slaves or not, that's more I had to look up records for them, as far as I know. So I may be entitled to some funds, at least my mother. If it stopped with her and I don't get it, that's fine. Somebody's entitled to some funds.
Right.
It seems like somebody's moving forward, like them or not, to press people to get me my funds. Why would I not join that? That don't mean the other people will stop being my friends. And it's not, well, me personally, I'm going to help the other people once I get these funds. I don't want these funds just to go live in the castle, whatever. That's stupid. Because we can get all the money we want. Then they're going to turn around trying to kill us to get the money back. I mean, and what they're doing, I think it's Miss Carnell. I don't know her. You know, I just watch online. I don't have a Twitter and all of that. I don't do all that. I don't read comments because most of the time the comments people haven't done the research. If you take the time to make a video, well, certain videos, a lot of times you can do research. And I heard Mr. Otis on that, and I've heard him on other things. I think that's one of the reasons I listened to her, because I had heard Mr. Otis like on Talk Time for Awakening and other things. So I have an idea who he is too. Because I just keep listening, trying to gather information.
Right.
And so I just don't understand in general why it's a bad... Yes, it needs to be perfected or whatever, and I'm sure those people who are working on it, they're going to perfect it. Why are people so mad that Black Americans are trying to get something? And it always... I've been around 40 years, at least. It always seems like when Black Americans... or trying to get something. If a Black American says, oh, I want to marry other Black Americans, why you can't marry this? Black American does this, why you? It's always a problem. But I'm just telling you what I see as a regular person. Thank you.
No worries. Thank you. As far as I know, all of us are just regular Black people too. But yes, I agree with you wholeheartedly. And Brother Otis, we gonna come right back to you. What I have seen that it's a skewed perception on both sides, and then what's happening is that at least via the comments, what I have heard Yvette Carnell say, as far as how she has received some of the information, because she's doing this, I think it's her idea, and I can't think of Antonio. I can't think of what his name is.
Moore.
Antonio Moore. It's their idea. It's definitely needed, and like Brother Big O was talking about, there has been other groups who have been doing this for a long time, and they have come in and made, like I just was saying, made these white people start moving differently. They have been recognized. They have been spoken about. You cannot tell them what to do with their project. You can, they're going to need us just as much as we need this to pass. That being having it voted on, because that's essentially what we all want. It to be voted on. So it's a lot of work ahead. I think the reason I talked about those emotions earlier, I think it's a lot of just one question as well, why we can't get it to starts instead of it being talked about sensibly, like Brother O does. Most people can't do that. It's not in them. So they react with that negativity. And to answer Cujo's question, yes, we are bred, especially us American Black people, have been bred generation after generation to degrade each other. And that's why I think it's easier to be negative towards each other. We all know that issue is here. Hopefully, we are all trying to mitigate that one person at a time that we come across, whether it's a smile, a hello, how you doing, simple things. Emotions are contagious. But I think it is the environment. Like Brother Ross was saying, placed in a more loving environment, things would be totally different. But we have the circumstances that we have here, and I think we have to address some of these things. For whatever questions people have, I have this bullet point, and I put it in the thread too because we didn't ever get to it.
Okay.
But there are some things that people are going to like, going to love, actually, and there are some things that they're going to want changed. I don't think people are approaching the situation with the right mind frame. And that's where all of the confusion is being held. Brother Otis just showed me, just sent me an article, and Roz, me and Roz talked about this a couple of days ago as far as this being the blueprint for other countries to do the same, suing whatever colonizer they had. So everybody's trying to do the same thing for whatever reason. More times than not, it's a black American that's arguing, what I have found. They may be arguing over the immigrant purpose, issue, because their friend or family may be in a first or second generation American. So they may be arguing on their part. But we're fighting amongst each other before anything even gets discussed. The first meeting that they having, a conference, is in October. So I'm sure there's going to be more details as time goes on. But with everything that we done over so many years, when they came up with this idea, of course they wanted it to succeed. But under the system of white supremacy, we always set aside a plan B. Or some of us do, whether it work or not. Some of us have a plan B because we just naturally feel like we're going to be stopped. And with them, they are continuing to go. I just glad somebody else is doing something. You know, ideas are taking off is what I mean, because all of us have ideas and sometimes they don't work.
Hello.
Yes. And Brother O, we're going to come right back to you.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Kumi?
Yes.
Oh, thank you. So I just have one question because I came in late. Have you asked one of the leaders, whatever they call themselves, to be on your show so you could talk to them? Because, I feel like you said, we talking about these people. These people aren't in court. I know the mainstream news said they're bots. They're not bots. They're real people. They have real opinions. Have you asked one of them to be on your show? Because, again, I think that would be, if we are having issues and beliefs or whatever, we shouldn't have them. We should have them amongst ourselves. And right. This, or I guess Mr. Reed, or I don't know, whoever, to kind of, for us to work this out, or, you know, let the differences be known or whatever, because that way, because it just seems like a lot of people are talking about them, but people are not talking to them. They're not coming to get you. They don't have any guns. They just have words. So say what they have to say. You agree, you disagree, and you keep it moving. That's what I do when I listen. I love Black Talk Radio, but it ain't my life. Y'all get on my nerves. I don't want to hear it. I just turn it off and wait for the next show. I ain't going to die.
Agreed.
That's just a question I had. Thank you.
No, I personally have not reached out to her yet because me, unlike you, I'm still learning about ADOS. Like I stated, I had done seen it, but you know, like you stated, just living life, I have 5 children. I'd be doing a lot of different things. I just kept an eye on it from the side. I'm again, like you, I didn't understand why all of the hatred or where it was coming from. So I have a lot of questions I have to ask myself as I go through the all of this, because to have someone with what she's doing right now, she doesn't have time to to sit up and have a conversation. So if she was to come, I would have to have my questions laid out, and I haven't dug into it enough to be able to present that to her in that manner. But yes, that is great. And me myself, like I stated, I don't have anything bad to say. I feel grateful, because if this works, let's say when it works, we're going to say it's going to work. When it works, everybody's life going to change. But it's not always going to be for the good, because remember what white people do to our communities when we do prosper. So there are a lot of things to think about and to get prepared for. But no, to answer your question, I have not personally got an interview ready with her, but I would love for that to happen.
Well, I'll see what I can do.
Thank you, brother.
I want to try to address a couple of things while we're talking. That's the only reason I really came back on here. The same research I tried to help with at New Abolitionist Radio, I'll tell you openly, I've been doing it for about 3.5 years with Yvette Cornell. And a lot of times when they started out and I hear them say information like they were talking about redlining and stuff, if I hear her get a few things wrong, I just send her some articles, and like I said, she come back and readdress it. She gives me an opportunity to speak on her platform. Now, I'm going to say this to you so you really get what I'm talking about. Part of their research has come from the fact that a lot of cases on reparation got turned down. I talked about it before when it comes to abolition. And with all the lawyers they got going on and in COBRA and everything else, I respect the work that those people were doing. But what has been evaluated, Antonio Moore is actually a lawyer. Yvette is a political science major from Howard University. So she understands the politics. He understands the legal end of it. And Sandy Darity is the man who came on and said, this is about his 20th year on working on how to hone this reparations. That's why I think it's disingenuous when people like Joy Reid came on with this thing claiming they were bots and that they don't know what they're talking about and taken over by the Russians. Now, it took a while to convince them of this, but I told them, you got to stop this person-to-person thing with them and hit the fact. When Joy Reid them said they were bots, we started a Twitter campaign that went straight to that girl, Digital Sister, and said to her, these are the words you said. You said that the IC community is well known in the IC community that the Russians are doing this bot and using the ADOS. That's her words. The first tweet that was sent to her was from me, and I said to her, since you are an IT professional and you're saying it's well known within the community, if you were trying to uplift this program instead of destroy it, you would share that information so we would know how to defend ourselves against bots. But here's the other thing I would do for you. Every 6 months or so, I download my Facebook and Twitter. So I can personally give up my information of 6 gigabytes worth of Facebook stuff to show you ADOS was being used over 3 years ago, not just on my platform, but over at that time, that had like 18,000 followers. So I can guarantee you that ADOS has been on for a long time. But here's the point that we made to her. Twitter is the one who put out an article in 2017 that said that they do not have enough bandwidth to certify blue checks and to stop bots. So they're using the algorithm to do it. Now, here's my point, and I asked her, why would you come on and say that a person who uses a hashtag is responsible for stopping bots? Bots have nothing to do with a hashtag. Bots are generated sometimes with human interaction, but it's a software package. So why would you say it's our responsibility to weed out the bots? We don't own Instagram, we don't own Facebook, and we don't have, you know what she did? She stopped talking to me. I sent the same information to her, to MSNBC, and I said to them, as a matter of fact, I did. I sent a second tweet to her, and I got some other people to back it up and do the same. I said, who in the world went over your presentation from the legal department at MSNBC? Because I have to know some people that used to be newscasters and stuff in Dallas-Fort Worth. Iota Johnson is one of the people that I knew personally. Nothing they say goes over that air without passing through the legal department. So who at the legal department told you it was okay to make an accusation that these were bots? Because what you're doing really is trying to stop a movement that has been organically grown on Facebook at two platforms, Tone Talks and Yvette Carnell. And here's the point that Yvette then figured out about 3.5 years ago with some deliberation. The reason that reparations kept getting turned down is because they kept making a case about the wrongs from slavery. But the point is, you cannot sue white supremacy. You cannot sue unless you can do what? Have a standing in court. Who created the problem for Black Americans? The government. From chattel slavery to 1865 to Reconstruction to Jim Crow, all of that was government sanctioned. So to sue to get any kind of standing in court or to push it politically and make Congress sue the other people that can take care of it without going to court, you have to show what? The line to who did the tort, who did the wrong. And see, so it's not about individual prejudice. And the other part is when you're talking about the reparations, that is what it's all about. I'm saying all of it. Health care, control of your community. But people keep wanting to argue, talking about you just want to get the white man's money. No. We want the ability to move around in a system of capitalism that we are born into without being on the bottom, without allowing rich white people to stay segregated by doing what? Living in a gated community and having fees and stuff that you can't even get close to buying the land because they're buying it all up. They have all the wealth. The only way they want to put money into a black community is do what? Give somebody a predatory loan. When your mom dies, you can't even pass the house on to your kids. Laws to stop that. The Freddie Grays, who got a settlement for lead poisoning when he was a kid, and then the same lawyer that helped his mama get that lead poisoning suit, the son comes along when Freddie turns 19 and talks him into selling out when he got a lifetime stipend. That's the stuff we want to stop, all of it. The reparations is not just about money. It's stopping the system, giving us control.
Man, as like I said, I'm gonna put this ADOS101.com into the thread, because this, y'all need to check this out. But there are many questions to be asked, and not from an attacking standpoint, just for ordinary people like us to understand what's going on. I'm going to read through some of these bullet points. But before I do that, Brother Rise, did you, or Brother Cujo, did we answer your question? And Brother Rise, did you want to respond back to Brother Otis?
No, I thought he did a great job. Actually, I think it's been very powerful, and he just makes salient points. And like I said before, I've never had a problem with it. I just think that every group of black people that have been oppressed should be on the same mission wherever, you know, they have their gripe as far as whoever colonized them is concerned. So, yeah, I think he's doing probably one of the best jobs that I've seen thus far as far as bringing a deeper understanding to what it is. And I mean, I wasn't lost on anything. And there's just certain things he just brought forward that I didn't know before. There's quite a bit that he talked about that I was already aware of. And it's just common sense. Like, I can't see somebody being against that unless something's wrong with them, or they're just, if they're black, they're a self-hating anti-black person or agent of the system. One thing that I thought about, and it was just while the discussion was going on, was Dr. Wilson used to talk about, she told the story of a Chinese guy that she had met in the airport one time, and they got into a discussion, and it was about black entertainment. And he had asked her, do black people actively participate in the forms of entertainment that make them look like stereotypical and
less than human or whatever the case may be. And she said she sadly had to concede yes. And she said the Chinese guy looked at her, shook his head, and walked off. And she discussed the fact that, you know, you don't see many movies done about Chinese people doing criminal activity. They are out there. You know, John Woo is probably the most famous one, and he was well known for his cinematic. But I mean, like, there's no wide-ranging genre like that. I remember Chuck D telling the story of being in Germany on a tour with 50 Cent, and he said 50 Cent went on before they did, and he was standing off the stage, and he was watching them perform his lyrics, and we know it was his first album, and just about every other word was nigga, 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 nigga. And he said it was so incredible to watch a stadium of 50,000 white German teenagers and young adults knowing every word for word, and they're saying nigga, nigga, nigga like he's saying it, but they don't speak English. And it made me think about black countries outside of the U.S. do not have a culture in which they've turned a denigrating word into an accepted term. So in Trinidad, they don't call each other nigga at all. That's just, that's not something you're going to hear somebody say. It's not a natural thing. Any of the islands, you go to the continent, it's pretty much the same thing. I remember Biggie performed in Jamaica, where his family's from, and they told him if he gets on there and starts on stage and starts cursing, they're going to put him in jail. He got up there, he did it, they put him in jail. Like, that's the way they do things. So the propagation of white supremacy via self-denigration in the form of the most popular art form globally is a major contributor to the perception or misperception of American Africans globally. And I know personally, because when I went back to Trinidad to visit relatives in the early 2000s, I remember I got to the island, and normally you'll hear like either reggae music or calypso or some form of traditional Trinidadian music will be playing, soca or something like that. And when I got there, everybody was blasting 50 Cent. At that time, that's what was at the top of the pile. We were already getting BET and MTV in Trinidad, so he was the it guy. And when I went to my relatives to visit them, they didn't want to hear none of the traditional Caribbean music. They all wanted to listen to rap. And that's just how it was. And what I find is, in societies where black people don't have the problem of being overtly controlled by white supremacists, but it might be politically in a form of some form of colonization, when you're being told when you get here that a group of people are not to be dealt with at all, stay away from them, they're trouble, and you come from a society that is the antithesis to how things developed here, it can create a disconnect. So you'll have the older Nigerians come in and say, Akata, Akata, because these are some of the things that they're seeing. And then the younger folk, their children, sometimes will go home and correct them. And I've even seen videos on YouTube where a young Nigerian girl, she's a child of Nigerian parents, she said that her mother used to say that, and she had to like check her mom and actually break down American culture to her mother and the fact that, you know, black people suffered like hell just for her to even be here. And it was great to see this young Nigerian girl just be honest about the way her mother talked and the fact that it did not affect her because she was living the life with other black people every day, going to school with them and visiting them, them visiting her, things like that. So whatever her parents was talking about was the propaganda that she said they got first in Nigeria, and then they got a reinforced dose when they got here. And it was only through her life experience she was able to go home and literally have multiple back and forth conversations with her mother to the point where she had to shut that down. And those are the types of things that will help. It's a form of educating immigrants who are getting the same miseducation that you are as a native Black American. So that's why I always say the connection is there in regards to the educational process to knock down the walls of misunderstanding. And the thing about Pan-Africanism is not that it is something that didn't work. It's never gotten the chance to work. it's only now, and Scotty and I talked about that when we discussed this before, it's only in recent years that the strides towards a more Pan-African scope as far as the way the African continent is doing things and the moves that they're making to remove the borders on the continent so you can travel freely from one place to the other. They're just starting to have these rights of returns popping up in different parts of the continent. They're moving forward with the Wakanda, the five Wakanda cities that they want to be built, managed and maintained by diasporan Africans themselves, for themselves, and they can be a part of the continental situation politically and what's happening there. This is just starting. Everybody who was Pan-African was dead or was kicked out the country like Garvey before anything Pan-African could really take off. So we've never even gotten to really see or understand what true Pan-Africanism looks like. And that is why just about every leader, whether they were from America, the Caribbean, or the continent, any leader of significance that really carried the movement as far as that global understanding were all Pan-Africanists. You can name them from Malcolm X to Nkrumah to Martin Delaney, one of the founders of Pan-Africanism. He was from the American South, and he's one of the major influences of Marcus Garvey himself. I mean, like the numbers of people is just awe-inspiring. But none of these people got to do their job because either they were killed or they were neutralized in some other form or fashion. So the same way ADOS never got the true, what they would truly do for what they experienced here as a people, it's the same thing with the global scope of Pan-Africanism. And whatever works to help my brothers from wherever they're from get what's due to them, I support that, hands down. That's the way it's supposed to be. And the thing is, we are all participants in the system. So we even victimize each other in ways that we're not conscious of. And this is globally, not just locally as far as us paying taxes and you know, following the rules and regulations of the system and just having to function in all 11 areas of people activity under that. I'm talking about globally. We have done things to each other. Globally, we're not looking at how even in early history, we've helped each other. You have 500 Haitians that helped America during the Revolutionary War to fight Britain that died down south. That they have a statue dedicated to them. I forget what state it is, if it's South Carolina or something, but nobody talks about that. You have about six regiments of American Africans that were enslaved here in the 1800s that fought alongside the British and were granted freedom and moved to Trinidad. We call them Americans. And every year there's a celebration of the connection between Britain, Trinidad, and these American citizens that relocated to Trinidad and were free men in Trinidad and got the same treatment and respect as other Trinidadians. And this was in the 1800s. They've been there since then. And every year there's a celebration and they bring the Maroons from the islands and some of the other islands come to Trinidad or they go to different islands and they actually have these acknowledgments and celebrations of this group of immigrant Black people that came that actually fought for freedom in the state. And the Brits actually said, hey, we're going to grant you your freedom. And they ended up being relocated to Trinidad specifically. So there's a lot of connections between our people. And like I said, 90%+ of American Africans came from the Caribbean to the United States. Very few ships came directly from Africa to North America. So some of the people that some of us are disconnecting ourselves from are probably actually relatives that we don't even know we have. So, and it doesn't mean they have a stake in the struggle of their descendants or their relatives that struggled here. They don't have a stake in what their relatives are asking for, but they do have a stake in what you guys do because it's going to set the precedent for everyone else who's been trying to do the same thing. And that's the way I look at it. This is like Haiti all over again. It's just a political version of it and people trying to get what they're supposed to get. So if y'all do it right, it'll set the precedent for everybody else to do it right. So why wouldn't I have a stake in that? And why shouldn't anyone else with any sort of common human decency and sense and love of self be against something like that? Makes no sense. Unless you just literally hate what you see in the mirror. Every day you wake up, you spit in your own face. That's the type of mentality you got to have to say anything against something like that, in my opinion. I could be incorrect.
Nah, you. Again, back to what I stated earlier, the misconception happens when people take a message of what they done heard and it's removed so many times from the person that actually made the statement. That would be wonderful if we could make that happen for
Matt Carnell, I would love to do that. I think to
come on to the show. But remember, the people that's the infighting is going on within ourselves. I haven't really heard anybody say too many things about Miss Carnell, but more about the followers. So, you know, it all goes back to that one coming code that I keep on speaking about, is that when we see other black people, just smile. You know, if they're not intending to harm you or what have you, a simple smile is contagious. Go ahead on and close us out, Brother Rise. And before you do that, did any of the callers have anything else you wanted to add before we close out this evening? Okay, then. So, Brother Rise, you'll hit us with the prayer and send us on out of here.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Before I do that, I just want to say the term Pan-African means for all Africans, no matter where they are. And that's what I've always been about. I am always ecstatic for my brother or sister seeking and getting justice, getting equitable treatment. That is what we're supposed to do. That should not be an exception. That should be the rule. And sadly, it's become the exception in today's days and times, because we've, you know, been in a system that is just completely anti-us. And a lot of us have imbibed that mentality, and we express it in a myriad of ways. And that is what we have to work against within ourselves first. And then we then can work towards helping other people who shed that part of themselves, if it's there, and maybe come up with a code where they start to really move in a direction that's constructive for all of us. And you pay the proper respect to the people. If you are a migrant to another land, you always pay respect to the people who were there before you. It's their struggle that made it possible for you to get there as a black person on a plane and not in the bottom of a ship. That's the fact. And if you're not about that, then you have no business being in somebody else's house. That's just the way it is, in my opinion. So with that, we're going to close out and end tonight's program. Thank you all for being with us this Tuesday evening. We greatly, greatly appreciate it. It was a necessary discussion. Thank you, Brother Pujo, for calling in. I love your questions and commentary, Sister Kier. Greatly appreciate your thoughts and comments as well. Always welcome. Brother O, thank you so much. You just you did a stellar job, like Dave would say, mic drop on that. Like, you literally just you laid it out really, really well. And I think if everyone else that's in this movement, that's at the head position, could articulate things with such actual truth, historical fact, contemporary fact, and a balanced approach. It's not an approach that it's an approach that's on the right side of everything. And if other people could take a hint from that and be able to articulate things in that manner, I think there will be much less confusion, and some of the people who have misperceptions about what this movement is would not have those misperceptions. So I greatly appreciate that, and I'm glad we got it recorded so other people can listen to it and get it as well. So with that, we're going to close out the show again. We'll see you again next week, Tuesday, Creator willing, and we greatly appreciate you all. Thank you so much. Almost started with the wrong prayer first. Oh, no, the right one. Creator, we ask you to help us to remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us to remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time that we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Let's replace white supremacy with justice immediately, and let's end prison trafficking human trafficking, the prison industrial complex slavery. I am in the love of the all, and all love is in me.
I am a part of the all, and the all is a part of me. I am one with the all, and the all is one with me. I can succeed as a part of the all and fail as an individual. I can be all that I wish in the all, as long as my wish is to stay in the all. I am never alone. The all is, I am. The all can, I can. The all does, I do. Thanks again for spending a Tuesday evening with us. We greatly appreciate you all. Please stay safe and out of the hands of slave catchers. Sobriety will be best in the system of white supremacy. And Creator Willow, we'll see you next week, healthy, and stay safe and have a great rest of your week. One love and good night.
Thank you to everyone that tuned in. Homework assignment. Emotions are contagious. See if you can change your environment since you know.
Hey, NPR. Click listen or add to queue now to hear a new episode from How I Built This featuring Roxanne.
Oh, excuse me. My apologies. Was you saying something, Ross?
Oh, not at all. I think something just popped up on the sound for a second, but it's going now.
Yeah. Anyhow, peace and love. Much love, much respect. Y'all have a good evening.
Absolutely. Good night.
And during the few moments that we have left, we want to have just an off-the-cuff chat between you and me, us. We want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.